This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, RC 49608. The Legend of Luke by Brian Jakes. Illustrated by Fangorn. Text copyright 1999 by the Redwall Abbey Company, Limited. Read by Brian Kahn. David Palmer was unavailable to continue reading of this series. This book contains 374 pages on 9 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player in fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the table of contents, or at the second beep to locate the beginning of the book. Library of Congress Annotation. Martin the Warrior sets out from Redwall Abbey to journey to the Northland Shore, his birthplace. There he learns about the brave and noble deeds of his father, Luke, a warrior chieftain, and he uncovers mysteries about the Abbey's early years. For grades 5 through 8, bestseller, 1999. From the Book Jacket, A Tale from Redwall. In this 12th book of the masterful Redwall epic, storyteller Brian Jakes goes back in time to the days before Redwall, revealing with dramatic poignancy the legend of the first of the magnificent Redwall warriors, Luke, father of Martin. Joined by Trimp the Hedgehog, Dinny Formole, and Gonf, the ever-mischievous Prince of Mouse Thieves, it is that legend Martin hopes to discover when he embarks on a perilous journey to the Northland Shore, where his father abandoned him as a child. There, within the carcass of a great red ship, broken in half and wedged high up between pillars of stone, he finally uncovers what he has been searching for, the true story of the evil pirate Stoat, Vilu Daskar, and the valiant warrior who pursued him relentlessly over the high seas, seeking to destroy Vilu at all costs, even if it meant deserting his only son. Brian Jakes reaches a new pinnacle in storytelling, imparting the story behind the story of the greatest Redwall warrior of them all. About the author. Brian Jakes, a legend in his own right, began writing his beloved Redwall tales to entertain the children at Liverpool's School for the Blind. Unbeknownst to him, a former teacher showed one of his manuscripts to a publisher who saw the genius in it. Thus began the Redwall series, of which The Legend of Luke is the 12th volume. A consummate storyteller, Mr. Jakes lives in Liverpool, where he hosts his own radio show and continues to spin his magnificent tales, creating new chapters in the Redwall saga. In addition to this series, he has written 7 Strange and Ghostly Tales, a collection of ghost stories, and The Great Redwall Feast, an illustrated storybook with pictures by Christopher Denise. Other books by Brian Jakes. Redwall, Mossflower, Matameo, Mariel of Redwall, Salamandistron, Martin the Warrior, The Bellmaker, Outcast of Redwall, The Pearls of Lutra, The Long Patrol, Marrowfox, The Redwall Map and Riddler, Build Your Own Redwall Abbey. To the memory of Tony Jakes. Book 1, Martin, Side 1. Book 2, Luke, Side 4. Book 3, A Warrior's Legacy, Side 8. Reader's Note: The maps found in the print edition are not included in this recording. End of note. The young must grow old, whilst old ones grow older, and cowards will shrink as the bold grow bolder. Courage may blossom in quiet hearts, for who can tell where bravery starts? Truth is a song, oft-lying unsung, some mother bird protecting her young. Those who lay down their lives for friends, the echo rolls onward, it seldom ends. Who never turned and ran, but stayed? This is a warrior born, not made. Living in peace, aye, many a season, calm in life, and sound in reason, till evil arrives, a wicked horde, driving a warrior to pick up his sword. The challenger rings then, straight and fair. Justice is with us, beware, beware. Book 1. Martin. 1. Summer's first morn was like no other. Trimp, the roving hedgehog, wandered through the woodlands like one in a dream, drinking in the beauty of mossflower country, so different from the cold northland coast whence she had traveled. Dew was still upon each leaf. Delicate mist tendrils wreathed into green-gold sun shafts twixt mighty oak, slender rowan, and stately elm. Birds trilled sweetly. Butterflies fluttered silently. Bees hummed busily over flowers, ferns, and lichen-clad rocks. Trimp's heart felt as light as the haversack on her back. She ignored hunger, feasting her senses on the glory of her surroundings and the delight of the new season. Swinging her ash stave jauntily, she skipped a little jig and broke out into song. You, lark on high, O minstrel of the sky, sing out, sing out. Now sing you joyously to Mother Nature and her earth. This is the golden summer's birth, a wondrous sight to see. Hail, fine tall trees, your leaves dance on the breeze. Rejoice, rejoice, and sway so gracefully, you'll feel your blossoms soon give way to ripened fruit some sunny day. Oh, please save some for me. Sing out, rejoice, let all who have a voice call out so sweet and happily o'er woodland vale and grassy lea. Good day, my friend, to thee. As Trimp ended her song, a voice hailed her.
And good day to thee, too, pretty one.
She halted at the edge of a ditch. Two sturdy old hedgehogs stood on a path at the other edge, grinning cheerfully. They were alike as peas in a pod. One of them called to her,
We'll help you cross yon ditch, missy. Stay there.
Taking a few paces back, Trimp winked cheekily at the pair.
Nay, you stay there. I'll help myself.
With a short run and a hop, she dug the long ash stave in the bank and pole-vaulted neatly across. Both hedgehogs wriggled furiously until their back spikes rattled, an ancient hog form of applause. Trimp immediately took a liking to the jolly pair. She stood directly in front of them and lowered her head formally, and they did likewise until all three creatures' head spikes touched in the traditional greeting of their species. Introductions were made.
Good sirs, I'm called Trimp the Rover.
Marm, I'm called Ferdy, and that fattens my brother Cogs, both of Redwall Abbey.
Cogs snorted, pointing to Ferdy's ample stomach.
I ain't as fat as old Ferdy, am I, Miss Trimp?
She giggled. You're as tubby as one another. Ferdy and Cogs exchanged wry glances.
She's pretty, all right. Pretty impudent. Aye, truthful and pitiless, just like all the pretty uns. She's thin, though. D'ye think she could help pull a log? Miss Trimp ain't thin, she's slender, but strong, I'll wager, the way she leaped yon ditch. She can pull logs.
Trimp pursed her lips shrewdly.
Of course I can pull logs. I could tow a log with both of you sitting atop of it, if I'd a mind to. But I'm feeling very slender today, owing to the fact that I've an empty haversack on my back. So towing logs means payment in food.
Ferdy and Cogs exchanged more wry glances.
Miss Trimp knows what she wants, don't she? Oh, she certainly does, mate. That hog ain't soft as moss nor green as the grass. We'll have to feed her. Only when we gets back to Redwall, though. Then she can tuck into vittles till she's like two of us'uns put together. So is it a bargain, Marm?
Trimp banged her stave butt down on the path decisively.
Done.
Lead me to your log, friends.
It was not a very big log, more like a heavy sycamore limb. They attached ropes and pulled, and the wood slid easily along the dewy grass of the pathside. Tremp was full of questions for Ferdy and Coggs.
What is this Redwall place, and how far off is it?
Ah, missy, you won't say that someday. Any beast'll be able to see it from a good league off. Right, Coggs?
Right, Ferdy.
When we gets round this bend in the path, beyond that big grove of oaks, then you'll see it, Tremp. 'Tis going to be a great abbey, but it ain't properly built yet. Martin reckons 3 more seasons should see the main abbey building showing its spire top.
Tremp suddenly stopped pulling and smote her forehead with an open paw, as if she had just remembered something.
Of course! I've heard other travelers mention the great redstone building in Mossflower. You say there's a Martin there. Is he a mouse? Son of Luke the Warrior?
Ferdy shrugged and beckoned her to keep pulling.
Oh, he's a warrior sure enough, missy. As to his father, I think some beast mentioned his name was Luke. Eh, Coggs?
Coggs switched the rope to his other shoulder.
Could be, mate. No beast knows much about our Martin. He keeps his past fairly quiet. Mark my words, though, Tremp. The noblest fighter that ever wielded a sword is Martin the Warrior. He fears nothing, and battles like 10 beasts.
Ho, ho! Looky there, Marm. That's Redwall Abbey, see?
Tremp's eyes grew wide with wonder. Never had she seen anything built on such a grand scale, even though it was still incomplete. The abbey reared out of the forest on the path's east side, fashioned from mighty blocks of red sandstone. There was a high perimeter wall with battlements and a broad walkway behind them. And, visible above this outer wall, the main building stood 2/3 finished. Buttresses, arches, and columns could be seen between the wooden scaffolding. Mice, moles, squirrels, otters, hedgehogs, and voles labored busily, hauling, laying, chipping, carving, and carrying all over the structure. Ferdy and Coggs chuckled at Tremp's astonishment.
Ho, ho, ho! Shows what honest, hard-working woodlanders can do when they puts their paws to work, eh, miss? Aye, building Redwall Abbey, a place of safety and cheer for good beasts to live in, with walls that'd stand the worst any vermin foes could think of.
Tremp enjoyed the pride in her friends' faces as they spoke of their home. She cocked her head as a hollow booming sound echoed out.
What's that noise? Are they doing something special?
Coggs winked at her and patted his stomach.
That's the call for lunch. We're just in time.
The 3 hedgehogs pulled their log through the impressively solid wall gates, which were opened for them by a mole. He tugged his snout, saying in quaint mole speech,
Good day to ye. Boy o'key, Bates. Ye little og mate be prettier'n both of you uns. How be you'n called, miss?
Tremp shook the formidable digging claw of the twinkle-eyed mole heartily. I'm Tremp, sir. 10 times hungrier than I'm pretty. A deep smile crinkled the mole's velvety face.
Girdly pleasure to meet ye, Miss Tremp. I'm a 4 mole hereabouts. If any be younger, then fear not. Usins can biddle ye up to your spoiky tips.
Leaving the log by the gatehouse wall, the 3 hedgehogs followed the 4 mole across broad lawns to the pond, where scores of redwallers were washing their paws before lunch. Tremp joined them while Ferdy pointed out various individuals.
That'n swimming about is Skipper of Otters, a chieftain. Pretty mousewife by the reeds is Columbine. Jolly-looking beast with her is Gonf, prince of mouse thieves. And the little un is their son, Baby Gonflet. Denny Formole you already know.
The hollow booming sounded out again, and this time Tremp saw that it was made by a squirrel eating on a hollowed section of tree trunk with 2 wooden batons. Ferdy nudged her.
That's Lady Amber, our squirrel queen. Come on, young'un, off to the council afore you sit down to eat.
Tremp followed Ferdy and Coggs to the orchard, where tables and benches were laid in an open square. Ferdy bade her stand back until all were seated. The traveling hog maid could not wrench her eyes from the food. It was like being at the center of a delicious dream. Cauldrons of fresh vegetable soup, steamed savory aromas around new oven-baked bread shaped into biscuits, batches, and loaves. Cheeses ranging from deep yellow to pale cream and studded with nuts, celery, and herbs were placed between heaped trays of woodland salads. Small tarts showed the rich hues of damson, apple, blackberry, and greengage through their pastry lattice tops. Jugs and pitchers of ale, fruit cordial, and cold mint tea were being brought to the tables by servers. Trimp held her kerchief politely to her mouth, lest any beast see it watering. Ferdy tugged her tunic hem and whispered, "Come on, missy, don't be afeard. Nobody will eat ye." He led her round to the table nearest to the abbey. A huge ancient badger, bent with the weight of many seasons, gazed at her with kind brown eyes and nodded. "Welcome to Redwall Abbey, little one. I am Bella of Brockhall. You look as if you have traveled far." Trimp curtsied deeply. She liked Bella on first sight. "Marm, I am Trimp the Rover, so traveling is my business. Since late winter, I have been walking from the Northlands."
"Forth clans? Did she say forth clans?"
Next to Bella, the tiniest, oldest, frailest mouse Trimp had ever seen was sitting in a small cushioned chair, wrapped in a thick, warm shawl. The mouse sitting on the old one's other side leaned close to her and spoke loudly. "Northlands, Abbess Germain. Our guest has walked all the way here from the Northlands." He turned smiling to Trimp. The hog maid warmed immediately to the sturdy beast, his strong features and friendly tone. "'Tis fitting to have one so pretty to grace our table as guest on summer's first day. I'm called Martin." The mouse named Gonf, seated close by with his wife and babe, winked at Trimp and called out, "Aye, matey, and he's never called late to table." Martin smiled at his friend and closest ally. "Ha! Look who's talking! The greatest grub-snatcher ever to lift a ladle!" Gonf pointed at himself innocently.
"Who, me? I hardly ever touch food, matey. A crust in a beaker of water's good enough for me."
His wife, Columbine, adopted an expression of mock surprise.
"Lack-a-day! It must be the birds eating all those pies and pasties I'm forever baking. What do you think, Gonflet?"
Baby Gonflet chuckled uproariously.
"It's me and Daddy. We pinch a pies and patties off her windersill when they be's good and hot. Us eat 'em all up. Yum, yum!"
Gonf covered his baby son's mouth amid general laughter.
"It was his idea, Columbine. He's been leading me astray."
Trimp took her seat amid the happy Redwaters. Old Abbess Germain waited until Bella brought order to the assembly by tapping a spoon on the tabletop. Heads bowed while the ancient mouse recited grace in a quavery voice.
"May good fortune never cease, where we build and till the soil. Mother Nature grant us peace, and reward us for our toil. Summer's come, now life is sweet. Food is here for one and all. In good friendship let us eat, as one family at Redwall."
Bella served Trimp with soup. Martin passed the bread and cheese. Columbine piled a platter with salad for her, and the charming squirrel called Lady Amber topped up her beaker with fruit cordial. Trimp went at it with the best. Dinny the Foremole shielded his mouth with a paw, whispering to the skipper of otters,
"Dearie me, I never afore seed no beast tuck into e vittles like Miss Trimp. Zer Gaunt be eatin' like e butterfly alongside o' that young'un."
Gonf the mouse thief wrinkled his nose at the mole.
"I heard that, matey. Shove that cheese this way, and I'll show you what a dainty eater I am. Hoy, Gonflet, get your spoon out of my soup, you little bandit."
Columbine smiled sweetly at Trimp.
"Like father, like son, I always say."
After lunch, Trimp volunteered to help Martin and his friends hoist a roof beam. Skipper and his crew were atop the half-timbered dormitory with mallets and pegs awaiting the heavy oaken beam. The jovial otter jiggled the rope in its pulley block and called down, "Ahoy, mates! If and we wait round much longer up here, we'll sprout wings and feathers and fly off." Gomp secured the rope to the beam and spat on his paws. "Right, mateys, let's send her up with a will. Any beast got a good haulin' river song to help out?" Bella held up a paw in response.
"I'll do Grumbledum Tug, if you like."
A groan arose from the hauling party. Baby Gonflet clapped both paws over his tiny ears.
"Not that one again, Miss Bell. You allus singin' Grumbledum Tugs. Ferdy say Miss Trimpy be a good singer."
Bella sighed, bowing slightly to the hedgehog maid.
"Trimp, no beast is forcing you to sing, but it'd be nice if you'd oblige. Do you know any good hauling shanty songs?"
Trimp did, and she immediately sang out in a fine, clear voice.
"Away-o, away-o, haul hard and take her out. I'll tell ye of the green hawk and her cap'n, old Chopsnout. Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho."
Old Reynard Chopsnout was a fox, a bad corsair to boot, who ran his vessel on some rocks while searching round for loot.
Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho.
So to the Northlands he did steer, the green hawk to repair. A warrior who knew no fear named Luke was living there.
Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho.
That corsair came with all his hoard. I'll tell you, mates, 'tis true. Brave Luke took up his battle sword, and that bad fox he slew.
Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho.
Then Luke called up his gallant crew, and Greenhawk did repair. He changed her name to Sena, too, which sounded good and fair.
Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho.
So Luke the warrior sailed away. He left the Northland shore. He swore an oath that one fine day he'd come back home once more.
Away-o, away-o, now bend your backs and heave-ho.
The beam was halfway up when Trimp stopped singing. Martin had his footpaws dug in firmly, holding the swaying oaken balk steady with the rest of his friends. He stared at the roving hedgehog, gritting from between his clenched jaws.
"What have you stopped singing for, missy? Keep on!"
Trimp returned his stare, shaking her head.
"But that's all I know. I never learned the rest."
Gomp slid forward a fraction as the beam began losing height. Urgently, he muttered,
"Then start from the beginning and sing it again, matey, afore we're all wearing an oak beam for a hat."
Trimp sang the hauling shanty, as far as she knew the verses, twice before the beam was safe in the otter's strong paws on the dormitory top. When the others went off to new chores, Martin called Trimp to him. Walking on either side of her, he and Gonf escorted her across to the gatehouse and showed her in. The mouse thief took flagon and beakers from a cupboard where he had hidden them and poured drinks for all three.
"Ninian cider, I calls this. Comes from the old place down south on the path, where I live from time to time."
They sipped the cold, sweet cider appreciatively, in silence. It was cool and shady in the gatehouse after the bright noon sun outside. Martin leaned forward.
"Trimp, where did you hear that song?"
"My grandmom, Welf Tip-Tip, used to sing it. She told me that she once knew a little mouse named Martin, too. Was that you?"
Gazing into his beaker, he slowly swirled the cider. "That was me. I am Martin of Redwall, son of Luke the Warrior. My mother's name was Sena." "Strange. I had almost forgotten it until you sang your shanty. Sena was the name my father gave to his ship as well. Being little more than a babe at the time, I don't remember much. But it comes back to me a little now.
Tell me, miss, what else did your grandmom say? Anything at all?"
Holding her beaker with both paws,
Trimp sipped and pondered.
There were names.
Call, Denno, Cordle, and others I can't recall.
Is that any help to you, Martin?
I'm afraid not. But carry on, please.
Now let me see. She used to talk of old Twula,
or Drun Tunneler,
and Windred. Windred! She was my grandmother!
Martin grabbed the hedgehog maid's paws.
Think, did I have brothers or sisters? A grandsire? What was my father really like? Tell me about Sena, my mother.
Even though her paws were hurting in the vice-like grip, Trimp's heart went out to the warrior.
I can only tell you what I know, sir. Grandmum died when I was very young.
She told me that I was born on the Northland coast, but we fled when the slavers attacked your tribe settlement. Our family moved to the Mid-North Hills. When I became old enough, I left to go roving, and the first place I set out to see was my birthplace on Northland shore. Alas, there was nothing left there of our old home, so I carried on roving until I met Ferdy and Cogs, and they brought me to Redwall. Gonf placed a paw on his friend's shoulder.
Steady on there, mate. You'll crush Miss Trent's paw.
Martin released her and went to stand in the doorway, blinking to hold back welling tears.
I used to know things, I'm sure of it.
But after the injuries I suffered battling the wildcat Sarmina, I've hardly been able to recall a single thing.
Do you remember Timbalisto?
Gonf nodded.
He was your friend from the Northlands, who was released from slavery and came here. A good mouse.
Martin struck his paw hard against the doorpost.
We must have been crazy, both of us. He lived here, yet for some unknown reason we never discussed our past.
Poor Timbal. He died the winter following the Great Mossflower War. Gonf poured more cider for his friend.
Mayhap 'twas too painful for either of you to mention
what you went through when you were young'uns. Martin stood staring out across the sunlit lawns.
You're probably right, Gonf. Perhaps it was. Trimp, can't you remember any more names at all?
The hedgehog maid smiled pensively.
Only the grandmum used to say, if we didn't stop our noise and go to sleep, Vilu Daskar would get us.
Aye, Vilu Daskar. Does that name ring a bell, Martin? No, not a thing. 'Tis all too hazy, too long ago now. The warrior walked off toward the abbey. Gonf watched him, sad for his friend and the forgotten past.
I ain't seen Martin like that afore, miss.
Trimp put aside her drink and stood up.
Only since I came to Redwall and sang that song. This abbey's a beautiful place, Gonf, but I wish I'd never come here and caused Martin such unhappiness. I'd best leave.
Gonf barred her path to the door, chuckling.
Sorry, me young beauty, but I can't allow it, and neither would Martin, or any beast calls themselves a Redwaller. Come on now, cheer up, earn your afternoon tea. I'll show you how I collect honey from our bees. You can lend a paw.
They strolled from the gatehouse toward the northeast wall corner, where the hives were situated.
But I've never tried taking honey from bees, Gonf. Don't they have a nasty habit of stinging you?
What? Sting me, the Prince of Mouse Thieves? Never.
Not as long as I can pretend I'm a bumblebee and sing while I steal the honey from under their noses, missy.
Trimp giggled.
Oh, really, Gonf? What do you sing to a bee?
Oh, this and that, you know. I usually start like this. Ho, fuzz, buzz, buzz, look who's a-buzzin'. Good day, Sir Bee. I'm Gonf, your cousin.
Trimp's laughter mingled with the mouse thief's song on the sun-kissed noon air as they skipped paw in paw across the lawns of Redwall Abbey. 2. In the days following Trimp's arrival at Redwall Abbey, it became obvious to every beast that something was wrong with their warrior. Martin was no longer his customary jovial and helpful self. Often he was missing at mealtimes,
and he spent more and more time outside the abbey. It was a worrisome situation. Martin, the very backbone of Redwall, silent and pensive, with a faraway look clouding his eyes. Skipper and Denny Formal wandered up onto the east wall top, which was an ideal place to view the beauty of Mossflower Wood in summer. Lady Amber and Cogs were also up on the ramparts. Formal greeted them with a wave.
"Good day to ye. You bain't seen Marthin, have ye?"
Lady Amber placed a paw to her lips, cautioning silence. Pointing downward over a battlement, she said in a low voice, "Martin's sitting down there alone." Skipper crouched below the wall top, shaking his head. "So that's where our warrior goes when he leaves the abbey. Still, you can't blame him. 'Tis a good place for any beast seeking solitude from others." Cogs peeped over at the lonely figure sitting below.
"I tell ye, friends, 'tain't like Martin to act this way. He's just sitting there with his back agin the wall, staring out at the trees. What'll we do?"
Ever the sensible Otter, Skipper began descending the wall steps down to the lawn behind the orchard. "Come away, mates. I'd hate to think Martin would know we're up here a-spying on him. While he's outside, we could hold a quick meeting with the abbess to sort the problem out." All concerned gathered in the gatehouse. Ferdy and Cog served them elderflower cordial and slices of plum cake. Old Abbess Germaine held a trumpet made from a spiral seashell with its end cut off to her ear. Though her body was frail and her hearing none too good, the ancient mouse's other senses were still sharp, and her eyes twinkled and shone keenly. She let them rove over the assembly. Bella, Columbine, Skipper, Denny Formal, and Lady Amber finally coming to rest on Trimp and Gonf.
"My intuition tells me that our guest Trimp and the Mouse Thief know more of this affair than we do, friends. So I want you to speak up clearly one at a time, please. Start at the beginning. Always the best place to begin. Pray keep silent, the rest of you. I'll hear from every beast in due course. When the story is complete, I'll give you my decision as Mother Abbess, based, of course, on your facts."
There were smiles and nods of agreement all around. Even as a young mouse, Abbess Germaine had possessed great sense and wisdom. Now, with the experience of countless seasons upon her old head, every Redwaller trusted her judgment without question. They were certain that their beloved abbess could solve any problem. It was late afternoon when Martin entered the abbey by the main gate. He was immediately set on by a group of Dibbons, the infant creatures of Redwall. Baby Gonflet was clearly the ringleader, wrestling fiercely with Martin's footpaw until the warrior allowed himself to be laid flat on his back. Martin was immensely fond of the abbey babes, always managing to make time for them and their odd little games. He gasped as they sat on his paws and held his ears. Baby Gonflet knelt on Martin's chest, shaking a paw under the warrior's nose.
"You be still, naughty mouse, or we chop you whiskers off."
Two baby moles hanging on to Martin's belt giggled uproariously at the idea, adding their own threats.
"Hee-hee-hee, and us'n's bitey paws often. You're, and Chucky in a pond, her."
Martin looked with mock pleading at his captors.
"Oh, lackaday, will no kind creature help me? I'm captured by wild ruffians. Have mercy on me, you savage beasts."
Baby Gonflet grinned triumphantly at his prisoner.
"Only if and you comes with us."
Keeping up a pretense of fear, Martin was led protesting to the abbey by a veritable swarm of mouse, squirrel, mole, and hog babes. Cavern Hole was a comfortable room inside the abbey, slightly below ground level. Abbess Germaine sat propped by cushions in her enormous ceremonial chair surrounded by her Redwallers. Ferdy ran up the stairs and back down again, his spikes quivering excitedly.
"He's coming. The Dibbons are bringing Martin."
Agile squirrels scampered about with tapers, lighting the colored lanterns which supplemented the customary tallow candles, lending the chamber a festive atmosphere. In front of the abbess's chair stood a long, solid elmwood table, unadorned and bare. Martin was marched up to it by the Dibbons, and Gonflet raised a chubby paw in salute to Bella.
"Us captured him and brought him here, Miss Bell."
The big badger nodded solemnly.
"Thank you, my friends. Good work.
Sit down now, and we'll deal with him right away." Martin held silent, only moving one eyelid to return a wink from his friend Gaunt. He was, however, mystified. Abbess Germain opened the proceedings by pointing an accusing paw at the warrior.
"What does this creature stand charged with?"
Answers came rattling back like hailstones.
"Always helping others, defending our creatures with his life, never considering himself, being good and kind to all about him, assisting Abbess Germain to design the abbey, being the best friend a mouse thief ever had, matey, and keeping Gert Troubles to himself."
Bella restored order by banging once on the table. She appealed to the abbess.
"This could go on all season. Pass sentence on him."
Germaine's eyes twinkled as she tapped her cane on the chair.
"Bring in the instruments of punishment."
Two trolleys were borne downstairs from the kitchens. One had a big barrel of strawberry fizz and beakers on it, the other a magnificent three-tiered cake surmounted by a marchpane figure of the warrior himself. The abbess looked sternly from the trolleys to Martin, and announced in a no-nonsense voice,
"I order that you either eat all of this cake and drink the contents of that barrel, or share it with us before you embark upon your journey."
Martin was plainly bewildered.
"I'll share it with you all, of course. But, what journey is this I'm supposed to be embarking upon?"
Gonf stepped forward, carrying Martin's great sword. It was a plain warrior's weapon, nothing fancy. The hilt was the one that had belonged to his father's old sword, black-bound with a red pommel stone at its top. But its blade was like no other, fashioned by a badger lord from a chunk of metal fallen from the stars. Martin took it from Gaunt, his face reflecting in the burnished steel as he said, "This has been used for a lot of things, but never for anything as delicate as a cake." Gonf indicated a spot on the butter-colored meadow cream between a candied chestnut and a honey-preserved rose petal.
"Cut the cackle and slice the cake, matey!"
A loud cheer went up as the keen blade slid into the massive confection.
"Martin the Warrior! Red Wall!"
Columbine took over the slicing, and Cog served drinks, while Martin sat in a corner with some of his friends, eating and sipping happily. He nudged the mouse thief. "Gonf, you tubby rascal, I've a feeling you're at the back of all this. Come on, tell me, where's this journey going to take me?" The prince of mouse thieves blew out his cheeks airily.
"Ha! You, matey? What makes you think you're going any place without me? I'll be with you every step of the way." "Sir, and oi, too. You bain't a-goin' and leavin' Denny Formole ahind of ye."
Martin wrinkled his brow in frustration and put aside his slice of cake, which Baby Gonflet promptly stole. "Look, will you all stop talking in circles and tell me where I'm supposed to be going?" Trimp could hold the secret no longer. She blurted out,
"To the place you've been dreaming of, where your father, Luke the Warrior, swore to return someday. The Northland Shore, where you were born."
Martin looked this way and that, blinking. His paws took on a life of their own, fidgeting distractedly.
But,
what about the abbey?
I haven't made any arrangements.
Then there's provisions, directions,
1,000 things that would have to be done.
Columbine came over. Wiping cream and cake from the great battle blade with her apron corner, She gave the sword to Martin and sat down beside him.
No excuses, Sir Warrior. 'Tis all arranged and taken care of since this afternoon. Provisions are packed for you all, and you've got the entire summer ahead of you. Skipper and Bella will take charge of the building work. I'll look after the Abbess. There's absolutely nothing for you to do or worry about. After all you've done for Redwall and its creatures, the least we can do in return is to allow you a trip to the place of your birth, which it is clear you long to see.
Martin squeezed Columbine's paw gratefully.
Thank you. Thank you all. What can I say?
The irrepressible Gaunt pounded him on the back.
That's easy, matey. You can either say no and sit around with a face like thunder until the flippin' abbey falls down on us, or you can say yes. When do we leave?
For the first time in days, Martin the Warrior laughed. He backpawed Gaunt in the stomach, knocking the wind from him.
Yes, when do we leave?
Denny did not notice Baby Gauntlet purloining his slice of cake as he shook Martin's paw with a hefty digging claw.
Boy dawn on tomorrow at first light, Zer matey.
3. Stars paled into the receding night as the cloudless sky turned from aquamarine to soft pastel bands of a new day. Out in the vast leagues of Mossflower, birds began singing among still foliage of trees which stood like ancient giants. The sun rose in the east, an immense golden ball, ready to preside over the morning and noon. Skipper and Bella opened the main gate wide, and all the inhabitants of Redwall crowded out onto the path surrounding the four travelers. Trimp was sorry to be leaving the beautiful abbey and its friendly creatures. Words of advice and farewells fell thick as leaves in autumn.
Fates and fortunes be with ye. Bringin' me back lots of seashells, Daddy Gonf.
Go careful now. Watch your step, Trimp. Aye, and don't let that Gonf scoff all the supplies. Stay away from deep water, Denny. And don't climb any tall trees, mate. Keep that sword close to paw, Barton. You never know.
Have you got a clean kerchief, Gonf? I've packed some extra for you. Oh, don't forget your flute.
Martin kissed Abbess Germaine's wrinkled brow.
Goodbye, Mother Abbess. Watch out for us, near autumn.
The ancient mouse sniffed as she straightened his sword belt over one shoulder.
Come back safe to Redwall Abbey, Martin the Warrior.
Redwallers stopped out on the path, cheering and waving, until the four figures, traveling north, were lost in the shimmering dust. Gaunt strode out cheerfully, calling back to Denny, who was lagging behind at a slower gait.
Come on, Den! Keep up, you old wobble chops!
Shambling along at his own pace, the good mole was not about to be rushed.
More haste, less speed, sir. We've gotten all the summer afore us. You mony get all hot and wearied, boy, rushin' along like ye fussy rabbit.
Martin slowed the pace slightly, allowing Denny to catch up. Always take a mole's advice, Gaunt. Remember, Denny didn't get to be formal by being hasty and foolish. Their friend's homely face crinkled into a deep smile.
Oy, thank ye for ye kind words, Martin. Moy old grandfer used to say oy was wise, even when oy was but a hinfant.
Gaunt could not suppress a giggle.
Ha! Your old grandfer'd say anything for two pieces of pie, as I remember.
Denny nodded sagely at his remark.
Aye, and like as not he'd say more for three pieces of pie, if and you hadn't stolen them first, Zer Mousy Thief.
Gaunt pulled a sad face at Martin.
Our Denny can be very cruel at times.
Martin tweaked his friend's ear playfully. Oh, I wouldn't say cruel as much as truthful. By midday, the abbey was well lost to sight. The four travelers crossed the ditch, leaving behind the path and entering the cool green woodlands. Trim scouted ahead a bit and found a beautiful site for their early noonday meal. Dabbling their footpaws in a small streamlet, they sat beneath a willow, lunching on apples, cheese, and honey scones, which they washed down with cold, clear water. Trimp watched Martin unbuckle the great sword from his shoulder belt and lay it down within easy paw reach. Admiringly, the hedgehog maid watched reflections of water patterns playing along the blade.
"What a wondrous thing your sword is, Martin."
The warrior picked it up and held it lightly, testing its flawless balance. "Wondrous indeed, Trimp, but you must always remember what a sword is really made for. It has only one purpose, to slay. In the paws of the wrong beast, it could become an awful thing if 'twere used for evil purposes. As the warrior who is privileged to carry the sword, I am honor-bound to uphold two things, the safety of Redwall and the memory of my father. The blade was made for me, but the hilt was always his." Trimp felt slightly sorry for Martin.
"This is a long trip we're undertaking, and we have only the words of an old ballad to go on. Maybe your father never really said that he would return. Or then again, he may have returned long seasons ago and sailed off once more. What I'm trying to say, Martin, is this. Don't be surprised or disappointed if there is no trace of him on the Northland shores when we finally get there."
The warrior patted his companion's paw fondly. "I've thought of all that, Missy. Don't worry about me. I've decided to treat the whole thing as a summer journey with three good friends along for the walk. Right at this moment, I feel lighter of heart and happier than I've been for quite some time. So hush now, and don't fret over me." Babbling stream water, combined with distant bird song and insects' lazy droning, soon had the four creatures taking a short nap in the shade and serenity offered by surrounding trees. They had not been dozing long when Martin became alert. Sitting bolt upright, he reached for his blade. Trimp opened one eye inquiringly.
"What is it, Martin? What's the..."
The warrior touched her lips lightly.
"Quiet, miss. Listen.
Gaunt, can you hear?" The mouse thief had drawn his dagger and crawled forward. Crouching against the willow trunk, he strained to hear.
"Gourds knocking together. Sounds like little drums. Chanting, too. Bit far off to make it out proper, mate."
He sniffed the air as if hoping for a breeze.
"No smell, though, matey. Mayhap just as well, too."
Martin crouched alongside him and said one word.
"Flitch-eye?"
Gonf nodded, still keeping his ears alerted for more sounds.
"That's what I was thinking. But what are Flitch-eye doing this far south?"
Martin shrugged.
"Raiding party, maybe?"
Trimp looked from one to the other anxiously.
"What's a Flitch-eye? Do we need to fear them?"
Martin explained.
"Flitch-eye are a tribe of runty weasels. We don't fear them, but they're within a day's journey of Redwall, so we'd best go and see what they're up to."
As they tracked their way through silent woodlands toward the distant sound, Gonf whispered,
"Flitch-eyes are a bad lot, missy. They use powerful herb smoke to stun their captives. You wouldn't see a flitch-eye till he's right on top of you, 'cause they disguise themselves with weeds and shrubs and live underground mostly. Though if this lot are Flitch-eye raiders, they'll stay above ground, not being on their own territory. Keep your head down and stay back with Dinny, behind me and Martin."
Trimp's heart beat faster. She was very excited, but not afraid, with Martin and Gonf leading the way. Skirting a fern bed, they crept up behind a fallen sycamore, and as they stooped in its shelter, the sounds grew more distinct. Voices were chanting in unison, with the thocking noise of gourds being struck rhythmically together.
"We de Flitch-eye, 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 wurra, wurra, gonna win a Laura, Laura wars."
Thock, thock-a-thock, thock, thock-a-thock-a-thock, thock. Bushes rustled and a few twigs snapped. Peeping over the fungus-ridden trunk, Trimp blinked in surprise when she distinguished the shapes moving against the leafy terrain. Close to 20 Flitch-Eye came marching past, brandishing stone-headed axes and carrying bundles of slender throwing spears. Smeared with plant dye and clad in a disguise of trailing weeds, the vermin were almost as one with their surroundings. It was a barbaric scene, heightened by the sight of a very young squirrel, paws bound and hobbled, being dragged along on a rope of vine thongs attached to his neck. Trimp's eyes began watering as 4 rear guard passed close to the sycamore trunk, for they carried big earthenware pots on hangers between them, averting their heads from the smoke which wreathed from the vessels. The hedgehog maid rubbed at her eyes, swaying as the smoke fogged her senses. Dinny slapped a glob of mud in her paws, murmuring low,
"Yer, missy, stick this on he nose and breathe through he mouth."
Trimp did as the mole advised and immediately felt better. She noticed that Martin and Gaunt were doing the same thing to counteract the effect of the drugged smoke. When the column of Flitch-Eyes had passed, the 4 friends sat down in the lee of the fallen trunk, and after a safe wait, Gaunt indicated that they'd clean off their noses. Martin nodded grimly at Trimp.
"Well, now you know what Flitch-Eye are like, the filthy villains. Did you see the little squirrel they'd taken?"
Trimp shuddered. "Poor little fellow. What'll they do to him?" Martin clasped his sword hilt resolutely.
"Nothing if we can help it, miss.
Denny, see if you can gather some ramsons." The industrious mole was no sooner gone than he was back, carrying 2 of the broad-leafed plants, still with their tiny, star-like flowers in bloom. Trimp took a step back from the pungent, garlic-smelling things.
"Whew! Keep away from me with that lot, Din. I can't abide the smell of ramsons."
Denny chuckled as he stripped the leaves and rolled them into small, solid plugs.
"You ain't going to like this, Marm, but it could save ye life. Here, take these."
Trimp's face was a mask of disgust as she accepted a pawful of the reeking wild garlic pellets from Denny.
"Grr! We'll defeat the Flitch-Eye easily by throwing these at them. What a dreadful stink!"
Denny passed the pellets around. Gonf chuckled gleefully.
"We don't chuck them at the foe beast, missy. We stuff 2 up our noses and chew the rest."
The hedgehog maid looked horrified at the idea.
"Stuff them up our noses and chew them? You're joking."
Martin was already plugging his nose with ramsons.
"No joke, Trimp. The garlic odor will overpower the smell of any drugged herb that the Flitch-Eye have. Come on, miss, get on with it. We're losing time."
With Martin in the lead, they set off trailing the Flitch-Eyes. Both Denny and Gonf were unaffected by the malodorous aroma of ramsons. In fact, they seemed to be enjoying it. Martin endured his in stoic silence, but Trimp felt close to vomiting at the overpowering smell. Traveling silent and fast, they soon heard the foe beast up ahead. Dropping flat amid some bushes, Martin, Denny, and Trimp waited while Gonf scouted ahead. Trimp sat miserably in the deep loam, her entire being swamped by ramsons. Gonf rejoined them, quiet as a shadow drifting over grass. The mouse thief made his report swiftly.
"They're camped in a clearing up ahead. Some must have been already there. I counted 51 all told, all Flitch-Eye savages. Saw the little squirrel, too. They got him bound to a post in the middle of their camp. 50's too many for us, mateys. 'Tis going to be hard getting the young'un out of there. Any ideas, pals?"
Martin looked from one to the other before speaking.
"Right. Here's the plan. Listen carefully, because it all depends on pure bluff. If it works, then we get out of there fast. Gonf, here's what you'll do, mate."
4. A mess of bird bones and feathers mixed with squashed, half-eaten fruit and vegetables littered the Flitch-Eye camp. Around the fire, undersized weasels squabbled and fought tooth and claw over any morsel of food roasting in the flames. One, larger than the rest, his face daubed blue beneath a helmet of ivy and bugloss, grabbed a half-burnt wren carcass from a smaller flitch-eye. Snarling, the owner tried to retrieve his food from the big weasel, who booted him backward into the fire contemptuously. It was an act of wanton cruelty that caused great hilarity among the other vermin, who sniggered evilly as their scorched companion scrambled shrieking from the blaze and rolled about, trying to extinguish his smoldering fur. The young squirrel, who was little more than a dibbon, was trying to shake off the effects of the drugged smoke. He shrank back fearfully against the post he was bound to. Flitch eyes with sharp sticks prodded him and licked their lips meaningfully. One weasel took out a blade and was about to start cutting the squirrel's bonds when the big flitch eye spotted him and knocked him senseless with a well-aimed rock. He stood over the fallen weasel, baring his stained fangs at the rest and speaking in his high-pitched growl,
"Nor yet! Feed this swiggle! Fatty him up a-plenty!"
He thrust the remains of the dead bird at the helpless youngster, snarling into the squirrel's terrified face.
"You eat! Come on, eat ye all up!"
Martin strode nonchalantly into the camp, as if he was quite used to this sort of thing. A puzzled silence settled over the flitch-eye at the sight of the bold, unarmed stranger in their midst. Pushing them out of his way, he went across to the two earthenware pots, still wreathing smoke from the drugged herbs which smoldered inside them. Leaning over, Martin appeared to sniff them both and gave a hard, scornful laugh.
"Ha! Don't think much of your cooking, ragbags!"
A gasp of surprise rose from the vermin. The stranger had suffered no ill effects from the fearful fumes. Still shouldering weasels aside, Martin pushed his way forcefully over to the little prisoner. Picking up the knife from the fallen weasel, he made as if to cut the squirrel free.
"Stop him, a mouse beast!"
At the shout from their leader, the flitch-eye surrounded Martin, hemming in on all sides. Swaggering forward, the big weasel thrust his ugly face close to that of Martin and sneered.
"We da flitch-eye, flitch-eye, flitch-eye!"
The crowd took up the chant, moving around the warrior in a shuffling, stamping dance. Martin waited patiently a while, an expression of bored indifference on his face. Then he pointed a paw at his own chest and shouted,
"I, Martin the Warrior!"
Quiet fell over the vermin, and they stood still. The leader pointed a stone-headed axe at the lone mouse, repeating Martin's words as best he could.
"Martin da hoya!"
He spat challengingly at the floor in front of the warrior. Martin coolly returned the gesture, looking the weasel up and down insultingly as he spoke.
"Fish eye! You da fish eye!"
The warrior had anticipated the flitch-eye leader's next move, and he took a pace smartly backward as the weasel swung his axe. The blow was delivered with such force that the flitch-eye could not stop it. He struck himself hard on the shin, cracking his bone audibly. Martin stretched both paws wide. Keeping his eyes on a double-topped oak at the camp's edge, he roared,
"Red wall!"
Hidden by the foliage, Gonf held the sword like a spear and cast it accurately. To the flitch-eye, it was magic. Seemingly zipping down out of the sky, the great blade thudded point-first into the ground at Martin's side. Wrenching it from the earth, the warrior swung it skillfully, chopping a nearby vermin's bunch of throwing spears in half with a single swipe. It had the desired effect. Flitch-eye scattered to get out of Martin's sword range, leaving him alone by the prisoner. Turning his back on the enemy, Martin gave the little squirrel a quick, reassuring smile and whispered, "Don't move till I say, matey. Soon have you out of here." The captive blinked with fright as Martin's sword hissed within a whisker of him, severing the ropes. Whirring bright in the late afternoon sunlight, The sword weaved a deadly pattern as its owner wielded it. Martin narrowed his eyes to a fierce intensity, glaring slowly this way and that at the Burman.
I, Martin the Warrior, we go now.
Gently lifting the dazed little squirrel on his shoulders, he turned and began walking from the camp. The leader, his face a mask of agony, limped forward, shouting,
Stop a mouse beast! Stop!
His cry was cut short when a sling stone smashed his jaw and laid him flat. A female, obviously the leader's mate, dashed forward, but she too was felled by a sling stone which whacked her between the eyes. She fell like a log. Martin muttered at the side of his mouth to the little one, Good old Dinny, never known him to miss yet. Then he turned sternly to the cowering Flitch Eye.
I go, you stay. Fish Eye, ha!
At a nod from him, slingstones poured in from Gonf, Dinny, and Shrimp, causing confusion among the stunned Flitch Eye. Back among the shelter of some big trees, Martin passed his sword to Gonf.
Good work, mates. But if I know Flitch Eye, they won't stay still for long. We've got to get out of here fast.
Shrimp just had time to spit and blow, ridding herself of the hated Ramsons. Then she was running, paw in paw with Dinny, Martin leading and Gonf behind her, guarding the rear. Trees and bushes sped by in a green blur as the rescuers hurtled through the woodlands, with the first streaks of evening marking the sky. Breathless and quivering, they paused at a wide, shallow stream. Shrimp stooped and sucked up mouthfuls gratefully. Gonf struck her on the back, causing her to cough out the water.
Don't drink now, matey. 'Twill slow you up. Martin, listen.
Flitch Eye! Flitch Eye!
The blood-curdling shouts of vermin crying for revenge rang out through the trees. Tapping the back of Martin's head, the little squirrel, who now seemed completely recovered from the evil smoke, spoke for the first time.
Chugger not want to get eated. Quick, run!
And run they did. Martin chose the stream bed to make tracking difficult, though it slowed their pace slightly. Pebbles clacked under paw, water splashed noisily around the runners, and sometimes trailing crowfoot weeds tried to tangle them up. Gonf turned at the sound of rapidly advancing vermin as the Flitch Eye dashed screaming into the waters upstream.
Flitch Eye! Flitch Eye!
The mouse thief held a stone ready in his sling.
They've seen us, mates. I'll say this for the rascals, they're good, fast runners. Should we make for the bank and head into the woods, Martin?
Martin pressed on doggedly with Chugger clinging to his back.
No good, mate. They'd track wet paw prints easily.
This water's getting deeper, and they can only travel the same speed as us in a stream. Keep going. Farther downstream, the watercourse took a bend, getting deeper. It was now well above waist height and flowing fast. Dinny grunted to Shrimp.
I don't like water. I'm girdly afeard to be wet.
The Flitch Eye, who were still in the shallower water, seemed to be gaining a pace on their quarry. Gonf turned and brought one of the front runners down with a well-placed slingstone and reloaded his sling immediately.
They're too close for comfort now, mates. I reckon we'll have to stand and fight it out.
Grr, no us won't. Look it, we'm be saved.
In the curve of the stream bend, a big old crack willow, which had collapsed into the water from the crumbling bank, lay half in, half out of the flow, swaying gently. Tripping and stumbling wildly, Dinny and Shrimp waded through the eddying swirls, coughing and gasping, the food packs they were carrying hampering them greatly. However, they made it over to the tree and hauled themselves onto its bushy top. Their added weight did the trick. There was a tearing of the last few roots as the willow upended and slid off into the stream. Martin and Gonf were both slinging stones now, dodging the long, thin throwing spears which the Flitch Eye flung at them. The little squirrel, Chugger, clung to Martin's back, yelling hoarsely,
Throw lots of stones! Don't let a fish eyes eat, Chugga!
The warrior looked to Gonf for his sword. It was evident that before long they would be battling paw to paw with the vermin in a life-or-death struggle.
Hurry and jump on a boat now, mates!
Denny and Trimp had paddled the tree close up behind them, using long, leafy branches they had broken from the willow. Martin pushed Gonf onto the makeshift vessel and was about to pull himself aboard when a snarling Flitch-eye grabbed his paw. For a moment, the warrior was helpless, clinging with one paw to the tree while being held by the vermin. Chugger scrambled up onto Martin's shoulder. Leaning over, he bit deep into the vermin's paw. An agonized scream ripped from the weasel's mouth as he let go of Martin's paw. Without a backward glance, Martin heaved both himself and Chugger onto the willow trunk.
Trimp, look after the little un. Gaunt, you and I'll paddle. Denny, get your sling and give those scum what for.
Trimp felt the current pull strongly at the tree, then they were whipped away downstream, with Martin and Gonf paddling non-stop. Wedging little Chugger in the sprouting branches up front, she went to assist Denny. The mole was roaring gruffly as he whirled his sling and flung rocks with deadly accuracy.
Goober! I'll give ye a billow, you choil-eatin' villains. You'll be a girt supper o' stones for ye.
So fierce were the volleys of rock and round pebble with which Denny and Trimp peppered the Flitch-eye that the vermin waded for the banks, unable to keep balance and throw their spears in the deepening water. Martin chanced a backward glance at their mole friend and winked at Gonf.
Look at old Den there, slinging away like a good un.
Watching admiringly, the mouse thief saw one of Denny's rocks take a Flitch-eye squarely between both ears, toppling him from the bank into the water.
Aye, matey, that mole's enjoying himself all right.
Dusk fell while the travelers made their way downstream, still harassed by Flitch-eye foes running along both sides of the bank. Martin peered ahead into the darkness and bit his lip grimly at what he saw.
Bad luck for us ahead. The stream is dammed right across.
Trimp gave a cry of dismay.
Look! Some Flitch-eye must have run ahead. I can see the shapes of them waiting on the dam top for us.
Sure enough, there were several creatures moving about on the dam, shrouded by the enclosing gloom. Denny groaned.
Us'n's be in real trouble now.
A hearty voice, quite unlike the Flitch-eye, rang out from the dam as shadowy shapes dashed back and forth.
Whoopery-hoo, cullies! I see Flitch-eyes! Whoopery-hoo!
Gonf began jumping up and down with joy. Cupping both paws around his mouth, he yelled to the creatures on the dam.
Garraway Bellow, you old dog swamper! 'Tis me, the mouse thief!
A figure hurled itself from the dam top, cut the water neatly, and came swimming at them with the speed of an attacking pike. Chugger nearly fell from his perch with surprise as a large, powerful otter bounded onto the willow as if she had been propelled from the water on a giant spring. Gonf threw himself upon the otter and wrestled her the length of the trunk, both of them laughing and shouting.
"Well, frazzle a frog, you old majesty! Good to see yer! Ha-har! Gonfo, me old tater cake! You got a belly on ye like a poison plant louse! What brings ye to my neck of the country, cully?"
"Yah, we didn't want to come, except that there's more'n 20 Flitch-eye trying to slay and eat us, mate."
Garraway Bullow tossed Gonf aside like a leaf and stood up. She looked Martin up and down, shaking his paw firmly.
"Struth, I wager you'd account for a few vermin before they brought ye down with a sword like that. No matter, cully, you leave the filthy Flitch-eye to my fighters."
Placing a paw to her mouth, she gave a loud, ear-piercing whistle, then called to the otters on the dam.
"Whoopery-hoo! 'Tis Flitch-eyes, all right. Go and get 'em afore they run off. Not like a Flitch-eye hide to make cloaks for our little uns, and winter's only 2 seasons off."
Otters materialized from everywhere, big warlike beasts, tattooed from ear to tail and armed with double-tipped javelins. Whooping and bellowing, they took off after the weasels, who turned and fled in terror. the tree nosed gently into the dam as Gonf was making introductions.
That there's Denny Formole, the pretty hogmaids called Trimp, and the serious-looking sword-carrier, who ain't nearly so pretty as me, is Martin the Warrior, my matey. Friends, I want you to meet Garraway Bullo, queen of all the Nort, the Northern Otter River tribes.
Garraway helped them onto the dam. Then she hauled the willow in sideways and lashed it to the timber and mud structure, remarking,
"No sense in wasting good wood. It will strengthen our dam. Come on, Gonfo, and bring your mateys, too. Seeing as you ain't been ate by flitch eyes, you must be hungry, right?"
Gonf laughed impudently at the Otter Queen.
"You ever recall a day when I wasn't hungry? I could eat a boiled otter right now, but I ain't got the time to cook ye, burly Bullo, so lead us to the vittles." "Oi, where you think? I'm a little flower growing on this tree? We're about chugger."
Trimp rescued the tiny squirrel from the branches, where he had been taking a short nap. He waved at Garraway Bullo.
"Lo, my name be Chugger. I hungry too."
The Otter Queen swung him up onto her brawny shoulder.
"Ha, ha, ha. You ain't backward in coming forward, are ye, Master Chug? Well, I reckon you don't eat much, so we'll find a smidgen of vittles for ye. Though I don't know rightly where you're from, or if in our vittles would suit ye, matey. How'd ye get caught by the flitch eye?"
The little fellow shrugged.
"I live in a woods with Granny. One day she go sleep. Chugger shake and shake Granny, but she not wake up. So I on me own, till fish eyes catcher me. But Martin, Trimp, and Gonfo be's Chugger's friends now. You be my friend, too?"
Garraway Bullo wiped something from her eye with the back of a paw.
"I'd like to meet the beast who says I ain't your friend, Chuggermate."
5. The Otter Den, or Holt, consisted of a spacious cavern dug into the bank, directly under where a massive ancient beech tree grew. Thick, gnarled beech roots, crisscrossing in all directions, formed a ceiling, wall beams, and in places, long, stout seats. It was lit by a great fire in a stone-built hearth and mantel, with ovens on both sides and cauldrons suspended over the flames by iron trivets. Otters were everywhere, though mainly babes and old beasts, since the mature males and females were out chasing flitch eyes. One wrinkled old male twitched his nose at Garraway, putting aside a wooden spoon he was carving.
"Why didn't you tell me there was flitch eyes abroad? I'd have gotten me javelins and gone out with the crew. Young snipfer ye are, never tell me nothing."
The Otter Queen inspected his work approvingly.
"That's a fine spoon, Datto. You put paid to more vermin than any beast in your young seasons. Better for you to take things easy and whittle nice spoons. We need more spoons."
The oldster sighed and resumed his carving.
"You're telling me, daughter. 'Tis those kits. They think spoons is boats. Go out a sailing 'em and lose 'em, they do."
The little otters, known as kits, were anxiously watching an old otter wife putting out spoons on the table for supper. She waggled a paw at them.
"I'll be counting these spoons after, and woe betide you kits if and there's a single one gone astray."
Gonf sniffed at one of the cauldrons, a breather face.
"Smells marvelous, Gonf. What are bubbling bobs?"
The mouse thief managed to hook a sip on his knife edge before dodging a swipe from the big fat cook.
"Well, first you put on a soup of chopped leeks, parsley, and shredded white turnips with loads of secret otter herbs. Then you get a paste made from corn flour, rolled oats, and carrot juice. Roll it into dumplings and press a good fat water shrimp into the middle of each one. Fry 'em crispy in corn oil, then chuck 'em in the soup. At first they sink, but when the soup starts a-bubbling, the dumplings bob to the top. That's why otters call it bubbling bobs. Come on, let's find a seat, Trimp. Supper looks about ready."
Before the meal started, Datto laid aside his carving and plucked a few chords with his tail on a flat, round instrument, which made a banjo-like sound. He called to Garraway.
"Come on, daughter! Give us your song afore the rest gets back!"
Queen Garraway fluttered her eyelashes demurely and launched into a ballad with a voice that shook the very rafters.
I'm bound to sing this song, though I shouldn't really ought. I'm queen of all these otters yet. They call me Queen of Nort? Yes, Queen of Nort. My goodness, who'd have thought one day I'd be a majesty, or something of that sort? But all the otters that I see must bow and wave their tails to me, whilst I just nod back graciously. I'm Queen of Nort, good Queen of Nort. My northern otter tribe live all along the river banks, and beat their foes with tails like planks. I rule them wisely and give thanks. I'm Queen of Nort. There's naught I'd rather be, I say to myself constantly. Your majesty is really me. And don't I look like royalty? I'm Queen of Nort. N-O-R-T. May I rule long and graciously.
Queen Garraway below bowed modestly as the listeners applauded, clipping the ear of a kit who was stuffing a spoon in his apron pocket and rapping the paw of another who was making rude gestures at her elders. Suddenly, the pre-supper calm was disrupted, as bounding and hooting the fighting otters returned, hungry as hunters and flushed with victory. Trimp found herself sandwiched between two husky females who jostled and joked.
Ahoy there, mate! Budge over a bit, will you? Yeah, go and budge yourself, barrel beam!
Eventually, after much shoving and hustling, every beast was seated, and a big, rough-looking, one-eared male bellowed,
Whoopery-hoo! Wheel in the vittles, hard and fast there!
Queen Garraway threw him a frosty glance.
Not afore you've made your report, Cap'n Barul!
Barul flicked his powerful tail and winked at her.
Oh, that! Well, there ain't no more babe-eatin' wicked flitch-eyes plunderin' the land no more. We slew 'em all.
Datto eyed him doubtfully.
How'd you know they're all slain?
One of the big females called out.
'Cause we asked 'em real nice, and any who said they wasn't got fixed up good and quick.
This brought roars of laughter from the fighters. Trimp shook her head sadly, remarking to the female next to her, How can you joke about killing other creatures? The otter's face became severe as she replied,
If you'd seen what Flitch Eyes have done to old ones and kits when they raided here in bygone seasons, you'd understand, missy. Besides, the crew's only jestin' 'cause they all came back alive and unhurt. This time we were lucky. Those scum didn't have time to sneak up on us with their smoldering herbs and knock us out. So they had to fight paw to paw, see?
The bubbling Bob's soup was delicious, as was the riverbank salad, arrowroot scones with honey, hot root celery cream dip, and dandelion cordial. Martin sat next to the queen, explaining where the four were traveling to. Garraway was very helpful.
Northern shores, eh? You'd be best to go by water, Martin.
Maybe so. But you've dammed the stream, and we've lost our willow. It's reinforcing your dam, remember?
Garraway brushed aside his objections cheerfully.
We only dammed the stream to make a little waterfall and a good slide for the kits. Another stream cuts in below the falls. We'll lend you a raft. It'll be easy, matey.
The river runs straight west of the seashores, and from there you only have to head north along the coastline. Right, Gaunt? The mouse thief slurped the soup from his bowl.
Right, Marm. And thank ye kindly for your help and hospitality.
Garraway whacked him playfully with her tail.
Listen, Gonf, you don't get off with it that easy. Come on out with that flute of yours and give us a jig. Tails in the stream. Aye, that's what it was called.
Gonf pulled out his flute and returned the whack, grinning.
You're a wicked old queen, forcing poor travelers to sing for their supper. Right, here goes. Tails in the stream.
At the first merry trills of the flute, every otter in the holt was up and jigging wildly. Martin, Trimp, and Denny had to climb to a high root perch to avoid the flailing tails and whirling limbs. They sat clapping their paws in time to the furious pace. Chugger was down on the floor with a gang of kits, linking tails as they whooped and kicked up foot paws, speeding around in a milling circle. Even the Ulsters danced vigorously. Every now and then the floor would reverberate as otters thumped their tails on it in unison as they sang, "Tails in the stream, mates, tails in the stream, no time to sit around the bank and dream. Is it a pike, perch, roach, or a bream? No, 'tis an otter with his tail in the stream. Whoop-a-ree-hoo, mates, whoop-a-ree-hoo. Clouds are white and the sky is blue. Wrap with your tail and stamp that paw. Bow to your partner and around once more. Bread and honey and cakes and cream, supper's in the oven, and tails in the stream." Gonf tootled faster and faster, and the dance speeded up until the entire place was a blur of whirling fur and thumping tails, finishing finally in a glorious collapse of giggling, bellowing otters. Gonf danced nimbly around them, waving his flute and chuckling. "Ha ha ha! Come on now, you idle lot, up on your paws. I'm going to play River Dogs Ramble Round." Panting and blowing, Queen Garraway extricated herself from the jumble, waving her paws. "Mercy, Gonfo, you pickle-nosed rogue, you'll have us danced out of our skins." Gonf helped her to a seat. "Right then, old majesty, sit and rest those ancient paws. Every beast sit now, but leave a space in the center. Hi there, Martin. Get down here and show him the battle blade dance. Come on, matey, don't be shy." Reluctantly, Martin clambered down and unsheathed his sword. "Gonf, I'm sure no beast wants to see that old thing." The mouse thief appealed to the otters. "Course you do, mates, don't you?" Martin sighed. By the furious applause that followed his friend's remark, it was obvious they wanted to see him perform. Trimp sat Chugger on her lap, settling down to watch Redwall's champion, while Gonf and Denny set the stage. A big red apple was placed on an oaken stump stool, and Denny sat on the floor, an upturned cooking pot in front of him. When he began tapping it with his digging claws, it gave out a sound like raindrops hitting a thin slate roof. Tock, tocka, tocka, tock, tocka, tocka. The mouse thief sat beside his mole friend. Taking two mushrooms, he stood one on Denny's head and the other on his own. Then he held his paws straight in front of him, a dandelion held firmly in either one. Gonf signaled Martin with a wink. What Trimp witnessed then she could scarce believe, but it convinced the hogmaid that no beast living could wield a sword like Martin the Warrior. Martin began moving slowly at first to Denny's beat, whirling his blade in all directions. Underpaw and overpaw, around both shoulders and overhead, the sword moved in a slow, flashing pattern, humming and whirring, with fire glow playing along its blade. Every beast stared in silent fascination at the wonderful display. Martin skip-hopped, his keen blade tip missing both footpaws by a fraction. Then he gave a piercing yell. "Red Wall!" Denny speeded up his rhythm, with Martin keeping perfect time, eyes half-closed in concentration. Redwall's great sword became a blur of liquid light, traveling so fast that it left patterns upon the air, figures of eight, circles, crescents, even shapes like flowers. Tock-tock-a-tock-a, tock-tock-a-tock-a, tock-tock-a-tock-a. Faster and faster the mole's digging claws rapped on the upturned copper pot. Otters held their breath as the perilous blade sang within a whisker of their faces. Trimp nearly bit through her lip at what happened next. Martin gave a wild animal roar and whirled upon his two friends, the blade striking down on their heads, once, twice. Both mushrooms fell apart, sliced from cap to base. Like a living thing, the sword hummed and flicked round Gonf's paws, lopping off the dandelion heads so that they curled lazily up in twin arcs, landing neatly twixt the cut mushrooms on Gonf and Denny's heads. With a leap and a bound, Martin was at the big red apple, his lethal blade appearing to be six swords at once, chopping like lightning at the apple. Never once was the blade edge heard to strike the oaken stump on which 12 perfect apple slices lay. Sweeping the flat blade to and fro, the warrior sent the slices spinning into the watcher's laps. Tossing the sword in the air so that it turned on its own length, Martin took a half pace backward. With an audible thud, the sword came down point first to stand quivering in the floor. Martin clasped both paws on the pommel-stoned hilt and bowed. The Nort otters went wild. They cheered and danced around Martin and his two friends, lifting them shoulder high and carrying them round the cave. Chugger was already up with his pals, the Kits, stuffing apple slices in their mouths as they cast about for dandelions, mushrooms, and sword-like sticks to repeat the warrior's feat. Queen Garraway Bullo gripped Martin's paw tight, pumping it up and down fiercely.
"Never seen aught like that on land or water, matey. Ho-ho! Thought you was going to make two moles out of Denny and leave old Gonfo Paulus for a moment back there. You'll have to show me how to do it, Martin. Great thunder, matey, what I wouldn't give for a sword like that and of yours."
When the warrior could get a word in edgewise, he shook his head ruefully at the crowd of admiring otters.
"Please, 'twas only a fancy exercise in sword control I thought up to relieve the boredom of training. Normally I wouldn't let any beast see me do it, but I made the mistake of performing it once at a Red Wall feast, and Gaunt's been trying to talk me into doing it again ever since."
Gonf patted his friend's back, obviously proud of his skill.
"Fiddly D, mate, shows you're a real warrior. Huh, if and I could do that, I'd be at it 10 times a day for sure."
Late that night, Martin sat alone on the dam. Inside, the holt of Queen Garraway was snug and warm, and he could hear the snores and murmurs of sleep-talkers drifting forth into the soft summer darkness. Martin smiled, recalling how Gonf had grabbed the sword and told a disobedient gang of Kits about a tail-chopping trick he knew for naughty little otters who would not go to sleep. It worked like a treat. They fled to their beds instantly. The warrior stared into the night, wondering what sort of a father Luke had been. He wrestled with fogged memories, confusing the images of his mother, Sena, and his grandmother, Windrid, as they merged together in his mind's eye. He tossed a stone into the water, watching the moon-rimmed ripples. What sort of place had the far north shores been? Had Luke, his father, ever kept his word and returned there? It was all too puzzling, so he turned his mind to thoughts of the Abbey. What would Redwall look like one day when it was finally completed? And that turned out to be a puzzle, too. End of Side 1. To continue, turn the cassette over.